Stacy wouldn't have. But the main catalyst occurred, I think, when I looked at the calendar and realized that today was Wednesday. The shootings and original abduction had taken place on a Wednesday. Of course, there had been plenty of Wednesdays in the past 18 months. The day of the week was a pretty innocuous thing. But this time, after we had learned so much, after my brain had digested all the fresh data, something meshed. All those little questions and doubts, all those idiosyncrasies, all those moments I took for granted and never really examined, they all shifted a little. And what I saw was even worse than what I had originally imagined. I was back in Caselton now, at my house where it had all started. I called Tickner for confirmation. I said, "My wife and I were shot with 38s, right?" "Yes." "And you're sure they were two different guns?" "Positive." "And my Smith & Wesson was one of them?" "You know all this, Mark. Did you get all the ballistic reports back yet?" "Most of them." I licked my lips and readied myself. I hoped to hell that I was wrong. Who was shot with my gun? Me or Monica? He turned coy on me. "Why are you asking me this now?" "Curiosity." "Yeah, right. Hold on a second." I could hear him shuffling papers. I felt my throat constrict. I almost hung up. "Your wife was." When I heard the car pull up outside, I put the receiver back in the cradle. Lenny turned the knob and opened the door. He didn't knock. After all, Lenny never knocked, right? I was sitting on the couch. The house was still, all the ghosts sleeping now. He had a Slurpee in either hand and a broad smile. I wondered how many times I had seen that smile. I remembered it more crooked. I remembered it jammed to overflow with braces. I remembered it bleeding after he hit a tree when we went sledding down the Goritz's backyard. I thought again about when Big Tony Maruno picked a fight with me in third grade, how Lenny jumped on his back. I remembered now that Tony Maruno broke Lenny's glasses. I don't think Lenny cared. I knew him so well. Or maybe I hadn't known him at all. When Lenny saw my face, his smile faded away. "We were supposed to play racquetball that morning, Lenny. Remember?" He lowered the cups and put them on the end table. "You never knock. You always just open the door. Like today." "So what happened, Lenny?" "You came to pick me up. You opened the door." He started shaking his head, but I knew now. "The two guns, Lenny. That's what gave it away." "I don't know what you're talking about." But there was no conviction in his voice. "We figured that Stacy didn't get Monica a gun, that Monica used mine. But you see, she didn't. I just checked with ballistics." "It's funny. You never told me that Monica was shot with my gun. I was shot with the other weapon, So, Lenny said, suddenly the attorney again. That doesn't mean anything. Maybe Stacy got her a gun after all. She did, I said. So fine, okay. It still adds up. Tell me how. He shifted his feet. Maybe Stacy helped Monica get a gun. Monica shot you with it. When Stacy arrived a few minutes later, Monica tried to shoot her. Lenny moved over to the staircase as if to demonstrate. Stacy ran upstairs. Monica fired. That would explain the bullet hole. He pointed to the spackled area by the stairs. Stacy grabbed your gun out of the bedroom, came downstairs, and shot Monica. I looked at him. Is that how it happened, Lenny? I don't know. I mean, it could be. I waited a beat. He turned away. One problem, I said. What? Stacy didn't know where I hid the gun. She didn't know the lockbox's combination either. I took a step closer. But you did, Lenny. I kept all my legal documents there. I trusted you with everything. So now, I want the truth. Monica shot me. You came in. You saw me lying on the floor. Did you think I was dead? Lenny closed his eyes. Make me understand, Lenny. He shook his head slowly. You think you love your daughter, he said. But you have no idea. What you feel, it grows every day. The longer you have a child, the more attached you get. The other night, I came home from work. Marianne was crying because some girls were teasing her in school. I went to bed feeling sick, and I realized something. I can only be as happy as my saddest child. Do you understand what I'm saying? Tell me what happened, I said. You have it pretty much right. I came to your house that morning. I opened the door. Monica was on the phone. She was still holding the gun in her hand. I ran over to you. I couldn't believe it. I felt for a pulse, but... He shook his head. Monica started screaming at me about how she wouldn't let anyone take away her baby. She pointed the gun at me. I mean, Jesus Christ! I thought for sure I was going to die. I rolled away, and then I ran for the stairs. I remembered you had a gun up there. She fired at me. He pointed again. That's the bullet hole. He stopped. He took a few breaths. I waited. I grabbed your gun. Did Monica follow you up the stairs? His voice was soft. No. He started blinking. Maybe I should have tried to use the phone. Maybe I should have sneaked out. I don't know. I've gone through it hundreds of times. I tried to imagine how I should have played it. But you were lying there, my best friend, dead. That crazy bitch was shouting about running away with your daughter. My godchild. She had already taken a shot at me. I didn't know what she would do next. He looked away. Lenny? I don't know what happened, Mark. I really don't. I sneaked back down the stairs. She still had the gun. His voice tailed. So you shot her? He nodded. I didn't mean to kill her. At least I don't think I did. But suddenly you were both lying there, dead. I was going to call the police, but now I wasn't sure how it would look. I had shot Monica at a funny angle. They could claim her back was turned.
You thought maybe they'd arrest you.
Of course. The cops hate me. I'm a successful defense attorney. What do you think would have happened?
I didn't reply.
You broke the window.
From the outside, he said.
So it would look like an intruder.
And you took Monica's clothes off.
Yes.
Same reason?
I knew that there would be gunpowder residue on the clothes. They'd realize she fired a gun. I was trying to make it look like a random attacker. So I got rid of her clothes. I used the baby wipe to clean off her hand.
That was another thing that had bothered me. Monica being stripped down. There had been the possibility that Stacy would have done it to throw off the police, but I couldn't imagine her thinking of that. Lenny was the defense attorney. Him, I could see.
We were getting to the heart of it now. We both knew that. I crossed my arms.
Tell me about Tara.
She was my godchild. It was my job to protect her.
I don't understand.
Lenny spread his hands. How many times did I beg you to write a will?
I was confused.
What does that have to do with anything?
Think it through for a second.
During all this, when you were in trouble, you resorted to your surgical training, right?
I guess.
I'm an attorney, Mark. I did the same. You were both dead. Tara was wailing in the other room, and I, Lenny the lawyer, realized instantly what would happen.
What?
You hadn't made out a will. You hadn't named guardians.
Don't you see?
That meant Edgar would get your daughter.
I looked at his face. I hadn't thought of that.
Your mother might contest, but she wouldn't stand a chance against his finances. She had your father to worry about. She had a drunk driving conviction 6 years ago.
Edgar would get custody.
I saw it now. And you couldn't allow that.
I'm Tara's godfather.
It was my job to protect her.
And you hated Edgar.
He shook his head. Was I clouded by what he did to my dad?
Yeah, maybe, subconsciously a little.
But Edgar Portman is evil.
You know that. Look at how Monica turned out.
I couldn't let him destroy your daughter like he did his own.
So you took her.
He nodded.
You brought her to Picard.
He had been a client. I knew some of what he did, though not to what extent.
I also knew that he would keep it confidential. I told him I wanted the best family he had. Forget money. Forget power. I wanted good people. So he placed her with the Tansmores. Yes. You have to understand. I thought you were dead. Everyone did. And then it looked like you might end up a vegetable. By the time you were okay, it was too late. I couldn't tell anybody. I would go to prison for sure. Do you know what that would do to my family? Gee, I can't imagine, I said. That's not fair, Mark. I don't have to be fair here. Hey, I didn't ask for any of this. He was shouting now. I walked in on a terrible situation. I did what I thought best for your daughter. But you can't expect me to sacrifice my family. Better to sacrifice mine? The truth? Yes. Of course. I'd give up anything to protect my children. Anything. Wouldn't you? Now I was the one who stayed silent. I had said it before. I would lay down my life in a second for my daughter. And truth be told, if push came to shove, I would lay down yours too. Believe it or not, I tried to think through this coldly, Lenny said. A cost-benefit analysis. If I come forward with the truth, I destroy my wife and four children, and you take your daughter from a loving home. If I keep quiet, he shrugged. Yeah, you suffered. I didn't want to do that. It hurt me to watch you. But what would you have done? I didn't want to think about it. You're leaving something out, I said. He closed his eyes and muttered something unintelligible. What happened to Stacy? She wasn't supposed to be hurt. It was like you said. She had sold Monica the gun, and when she realized why, she rushed to stop her. But she arrived too late. Yes. She saw you. He nodded. Look, I told her everything. She wanted to help Mark. She wanted to do the right thing. But in the end, the habit was too strong. She blackmailed you. She asked for money. I gave it to her. That wasn't important. But she was there. And when I went to Picard, I told him everything that had happened. You have to understand. I thought you were going to die. When you didn't, I knew that you'd go nuts without closure. Your daughter was gone. I talked to Picard about it. He came up with the idea of a fake kidnapping. We'd all make a lot of money. You took money for this? Lenny leaned back as if I'd just slapped him. Of course not. I put my share into a trust fund for Tara's college. But the idea of this fake kidnapping appealed to me. They'd set it up so in the end it would look like Tara was dead. You'd have closure. We'd also be taking money from Edgar and funneling at least some of it to Tara. It seemed like a win-win. Except?
Except when they heard about Stacy, they decided that they couldn't depend on a drug addict to keep quiet. The rest you know. They lured her with money. They made sure she got caught on tape. And then, without telling me, they killed her. I thought about that. I thought about Stacy's last minutes in the cabin. Did she know that she was going to die? Or did she just drift off, thinking she was merely getting yet another fix? You were the leak, weren't you? He didn't reply. You told them about the police being involved. Don't you see? It made no difference. They never intended to give Tara back. She was already with the Tansmores. After the ransom drop, I thought it was over. We all tried to move on. So what happened? Picard decided to run the ransom again. Were you in on it? I asked. No. He kept me out of the loop. When did you learn about it? When you told me in the hospital. I was furious. I called him. He told me to relax, that there was no way it could be traced back to us. But we did trace it back. He nodded. And you knew that I was getting close to Picard. I told you on the phone. Yes. Wait a minute. A fresh chill ran up my neck. In the end, Picard wanted a clean house. He called those two lunatics. The woman, that Lydia, she went out and killed Tatiana. Heshi was sent to take care of Denise Vanetch. But I thought it through. But when I saw Stephen Picard, he had just been shot. He was still bleeding. There was no way either of them could have done it. I looked up. You killed him, Lenny. Rage seeped into his voice. You think I wanted to? Then why? What do you mean, why? I was Picard's get-out-of-jail-free card. When it all started to go wrong, he said he would turn state's evidence against me. He'd claim I shot you and Monica and brought him Tara. Like I said before, the cops hate me. I've gotten too many bad guys off. They'd go for the deal in a second. You'd have gone to jail. Lenny looked near tears. Your kids would have suffered. He nodded. So you killed a man in cold blood. What else could I do? You're looking at me like that, but deep down you know the truth. This was your mess. I got stuck cleaning it up. Because I cared about you. I wanted to help your child. He stopped, closed his eyes, and added, And I knew that if I killed Picard, maybe I could save you too. Me. Another cost-benefit analysis, Mark. What are you talking about? It was over. Once Picard was dead, he could take the fall. For everything. I was in the clear. Lenny came over and stood in front of me. For a moment, I thought he was going to try to hug me. But he just stood there. I wanted you to have peace, Mark. But that would never be. I knew that now.
Not until you found your daughter. With Bacard dead, my family was safe. I could let you know the truth. So you wrote up that anonymous note and left it on Eleanor's desk. Yes. I nodded, and Abe's words came back to me. You did the wrong thing for the right reason. Put yourself in my place. What would you have done? I don't know, I said. I did it for you. And the saddest part was he was telling the truth. I looked at him. You were the best friend I ever had, Lenny. I love you. I love your wife. I love your children. What are you going to do? If I say I'm going to talk, will you kill me too? Never, he said. But I wasn't sure. Much as I loved him, much as he loved me, that I believed him. Epilogue. A year has passed. During the first 2 months, I racked up the frequent flyer miles coming out to St. Louis every week, trying to figure out with Abe and Lorraine what we were going to do. We started slowly. For the first few visits, I asked Abe and Lorraine to stay in the room. Eventually, Tara and I started going places alone. The park, the zoo, the merry-go-round at the mall. But she looked over her shoulder a lot. It took some time for my daughter to get comfortable with me. I understood that. My father passed away in his sleep 10 months ago. After his funeral, I bought a house on Marsh Lane, 2 down from Abe and Lorraine, and moved out here permanently. Abe and Lorraine are remarkable people. Get this. We call our daughter Tasha. Think about it. It's short for Natasha and close to Tara. The reconstructive surgeon in me likes that. I keep waiting for things to go wrong. They haven't. It's weird, but I don't question it much. My mother bought a condo and moved out here, too. With Dad gone, there was no reason for her to stay in Castleton anymore. After all the tragedies, my father's poor health, Stacy, Monica, the attack, the abduction, we both needed a second act. I'm glad she's near us. Mom has a new boyfriend, a guy named Cy. She's happy. I like him, and not just because he has season tickets to the Rams. They laugh a lot. I almost forgot how hard my mom could laugh. I talked to Vern a fair amount. He and Katerina brought Vern Jr. and Perry out in an RV during the spring. We had a great week together. Vern took me fishing, a first for me. I liked it. Next time he wants to hunt. I told him no way, but Vern can be pretty persuasive. I don't talk much to Edgar Portman. He sends presents on Tasha's birthday. He's called twice. I'm hoping he'll come out and see his granddaughter soon. But there's simply too much guilt there for both of us. It's like I said before. Maybe Monica was unstable. Maybe it was just a chemical thing. I know that a great deal of psychiatry problems stem more from the physical, from hormonal imbalances than life experiences. Chances are there was nothing we could have done. But in the end, whatever may have been the origin, we both let Monica down.
Zia was initially hit hard by my leaving, but then she saw it as an opportunity. She has a new doctor in the practice. I hear he's pretty good. I've opened up a one-world rat branch office in St. Louis. So far, it seems to be going well. Lydia, or Larissa Dane, if you prefer, is going to get off. She did a double flip off a murder rap and stuck the I was abused landing with both feet. She is a celebrity again. What with the mysterious return of the pixie named Trixie. Lydia appeared on Oprah, crying on cue about the years of torment at the hands of Heshy. They flashed his picture up on the screen. The audience gasped. Heshy is hideous. Lydia is beautiful. So the world believes. Rumor has it, she is set to appear in a TV movie based on her life story. As for the baby smuggling case, the FBI decided to enforce the law, which meant bringing the bad guys to justice. Stephen Bacard and Denise Vanetch were the bad guys here. They're both dead. Officially, authorities are still searching for the records, but nobody wants to look too closely at what child ended up where. I think that's best. Rachel fully recovered from her injuries. I ended up doing the reconstructive work on her ear myself. Her bravery got major play in the press. She received credit for smashing the baby smuggling ring. The FBI rehired her. She requested and received a post in St. Louis. We live together. I love her. I love her more than you can imagine. But if you are expecting a totally happy ending, I'm not sure I can give you one. As of now, Rachel and I are still together. I cannot imagine living without her. I think about losing her, and it makes me physically ill. Yet I'm not sure that's enough. There is a lot of baggage here. It confuses things. I understand about her making that late-night call and showing up outside the hospital. And yet I know those acts eventually led to death and destruction. I don't blame Rachel, of course. But there is something there. Monica's death has given our relationship a second chance. That feels strange. I tried explaining all of this to Vern when he visited. He told me that I'm a dumbass. I think he's probably right. The doorbell rings. There is a tug on my leg now. Yes, it's Tasha. She is fully acclimated to having me in her life now. Children, after all, adapt better than adults. Across the room, Rachel is on the couch. She is sitting with her legs curled under her. I look at her, then at Tasha, and I feel the wondrous blend of bliss and fear. They, bliss and fear, are constant companions. Rarely does one venture out without the other. "One second, Pumpkin," I say to her. "Let's go answer the door, okay?" "Okay." The UPS man is there. He has packages. I bring them inside. When I look at the return address, I feel the familiar ache. The little sticker tells me that they are from Lenny and Cheryl Marcus of Caselton, New Jersey. Tasha looks up at me. "My present?" I never told the police about Lenny. There was no evidence anyway. Only his confession to me. That wouldn't stand up in court. But that's not why
I decided not to say anything. I suspect Cheryl knows the truth. I think maybe she knew from the beginning. I flash back to her face on the stairs, the way she snapped when Rachel and I arrived at their house that night, and now I wonder if it was out of anger or fear. I suspect the latter. The fact is, Lenny was right. He did do it for me. What would have happened if he had just left the house? I don't know. It might have been even worse. Lenny asked me if I would have done the same in his place. Back then, probably not. Because maybe I wasn't that good a man. Vern, I bet, would have. Lenny was trying to protect my daughter without sacrificing his own family. He just messed up. But man, I miss him. I think about how big a part of my life he was. There are times I reach for the phone and begin dialing his number. But I never finish the call. I won't speak to Lenny again. Not ever. I know that. And it hurts like hell. But I also think about little Connor's inquisitive face at the soccer game. I think about Kevin playing soccer and Marianne's hair smelling of chlorine from her morning swim practice. I think about how beautiful Cheryl had become since she had the children. I look down at my daughter now, safe and with me. Tasha is still gazing up. It is indeed a present for her from her godfather. I remember the first time I met Abe. That strange day at the airport Marriott. He told me that you shouldn't do the wrong thing for the right reason. I thought about that a lot before deciding what to do about Lenny. In the end, well, chalk it up as too close to call. I mix it up sometimes. Is it the wrong thing for the right reason or the right thing for the wrong reason? Or are they the same? Monica needed to feel love, so she deceived me and got pregnant. That was how it all started. But if she hadn't done that, I wouldn't be staring down at the most wonderful creation I would ever know. Right reason? Wrong reason? Who's to say? Tasha tilts her head and twitches her nose at me. Daddy? It's nothing, sweetheart, I say softly. Tasha gives me a big, elaborate kid shrug. Rachel looks up. I see the concern on her face. I take the package and place it high up in the closet. Then I close that door and pick up my daughter. This is Scott Brick. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of No Second Chance by Harlan Coben. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced by Janet Stark. No Second Chance is a production of Penguin Audiobooks and Books on Tape Incorporated. Copyright 2003. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.